I see AI in healthcare in phases, and it's a cultural thing. Obviously, healthcare, very conservative. We take our time. We got to make sure we do things correctly, because if we don't do them correctly, someone may die.
Welcome to the Business of AI in Healthcare podcast. Our mission is to discuss practical insights and share knowledge on how to navigate the transformative technology of AI. It is important to understand how AI can be used safely and ethically while revolutionizing patient care, streamlining operations, and enhancing medical research. I'm your host, Dr. Bob Kaiser. Be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your favorite podcasting app to ensure you don't miss any of the featured episodes. You can also join us online at thebusinessofaiinhealthcare.com. Today, we have a most interesting guest for the business of AI in healthcare. He is a recovering emergency room doctor turned AI futurist. As an author and public speaker, he's committed to educating and motivating others about AI's transformative role in healthcare. His unique blend of experiences in healthcare, physician collaboration, and healthcare management provides valuable insights into the world of AI. We're so glad to welcome Dr. Harvey Castro.
Thanks for having me. It's exciting to be here.
Well, Harvey, I've been looking forward to this opportunity to interview you, and I know it'll be difficult to maintain a focus on any particular topic since you cover such a broad range of interests. So if you don't mind, let's start with your story. A recovering ER doc, how'd you become so AI-centric?
That's a great question. And it goes back to the iPhone 1. I was in the emergency room, taking care of a patient. And I asked my nurse, hey, let's start this IV drip. And she said, 1 second, doc. She went and got a textbook, started looking through, got a calculator out, typed it all in, got the information. And it took a couple of minutes. And I'm staring at the first iPhone thinking, I wonder if we can create an app. And so fast forward, I created an app that was used all over the world. And I was so excited to be able to contribute technology to medicine that when the ChatGPT came out, that aha moment that I had with the iPhone moment was huge. And I thought, I'm going to write a book. Literally, it was November 30th, 2022. I was sitting in this office and I was playing with ChatGPT. And I thought, this is going to change healthcare. And I'm going to write the first book on it. And literally within minutes, I started writing a book on how to apply ChatGPT in healthcare. And that's how I started this journey of AI in healthcare.
So did you bump into this ChatGPT, or did someone come to you and say, hey, check this out? Did you find it out from another friend, or how? I know for me, it was just like, all of a sudden it's in the news, and I go, it's in the news. I need to learn more about this. So what was your experience like? How'd you first hear about it?
It was funny, to be honest. I was literally just surfing the web. I had turned it on and I forget what my search was, and I'm going to have to go back and see if my history still shows. And it literally, OpenAI showed up, and I thought, oh, what is this ChatGPT thing? And I started chatting with it. And when I started getting the first responses, I thought, oh my gosh, let me start asking it medicine and let me start teasing out certain things. And within minutes, I thought, this is unreal. My brain just literally blew up thinking of all the possibilities of how I could apply this in healthcare.
So we've interviewed a couple of other doctors that are, they're into informatics in a big way. I mean, matter of fact, they're board certified in informatics. And they kind of got into it because they're dealing with data all the time. And my first impression was that if you're a physician, are you going to become this extreme technical nerd, a real high-tech nerd type person or not? And most of them have said, no, we know enough about this to apply it, but we're really not down in that deep level. But I kind of think of you, I may be wrong, but I kind of think of you as really kind of going deeper and deeper into this. Is that true?
Yes, sir. As a doctor, the scientist in me doesn't go away. In fact, I wrote the first book and people started talking to me really deep in the weeds and going into the science and the database and the theory. And immediately I said, I'm taking a course. So I started with, you know, like everything, intro courses, intermediate, then advanced. And I really started studying the science, like how does AI work? What is the computer science behind it? How does the data why is it biased? And is this a mathematical equation? Is this a little bit more? And I know my wife thought I probably was crazy because I really went all in. I wanted to know every detail. And so now it's kind of fun because when I meet with people that program AI and they start speaking on the theory or they start talking about different ways of doing, I totally understand what language they're saying. And it gives me an advantage because when I speak AI and I start seeing different models that are out there, we all know ChatGPT, then there's Claude, then I can really look at the studies and understand the theory behind and why it's working and what the issues are. So it gives me another level that I can bring to the patient.
You just couldn't stop the curiosity gene, it sounds like. You just wanted to know more and know more and know more. So that really branched you out. I think of you, I've seen you, present and be involved. And it looks like you're doing a lot of what I'd call education and training programs for healthcare professionals to work with AIs. Do you find that as an important component, this creating this awareness for the other doctors, the other people in healthcare?
Yes, sir. I see AI in healthcare in phases, and it's a cultural thing. Obviously, healthcare, very conservative. We take our time. We got to make sure we do things correctly, because if we don't do them correctly, someone may die. So we take this very serious. But when I look at it, that culture has been established, and we have early adopters, people like me that jump on whatever technology and I want to know how it works and see how I can make it work. And I see it as a mission to go out there and teach doctors, nurses, healthcare professionals how to use these tools. And the reason I think I'm so successful or special in a sense is that I'm using my 20 years of ER experience, I'm using my entrepreneur spirit, and then I'm bringing AI. And when I present and show things, I know it's not out in the news. I know no one else has talked about it because I know literally it just came out. And I'm applying those knowledge bases into something. And so when I speak, I'm able to not only just say theory, but say, hey, here's an example. Here's how I would do it in the clinic. This is now something that you can do. And that has so much power because it's coming from a doctor. It's coming from someone that knows AI. And then it's coming with that entrepreneur thinking outside the box spirit. So when it's presented to most individuals, they're thinking, whoa. And I often get that question, like, where did you read that? What hospital's doing this? Show me the study. And I'm like, no, end of one right here. This is me showing you.
Well, you know, we learn a lot about change. And this is a huge change element. I can tell you that we like to say things will never be the same, you know, that things are really going to change really, really fast. And on one hand, it seems that way. If you go out to the media, you know, everybody's talking about AI. But some of the physicians I talk to, they're a little bit more reluctant. They're sitting there going, not sure if we're ready for this yet. And they're kind of holding back. Do you see that taking place as well?
Yes, sir. I definitely can agree with that. And I 100% agree and understand where they're coming from. Two things. We don't know what we don't know. So if it's foreign and we're accustomed, then we're set in our ways. As a physician that has been practicing, I feel like at times some of the individuals that have been practicing, say 30, 40 years, they're really ingrained. They see it a certain way. And to be taught a different way of thinking, to be taught a new tool is sometimes really difficult. And that's another reason why I'm out there in the world just speaking, because it's a lot easier for me to speak to another doctor if it's a doctor-to-doctor conversation versus doctor-to-non-doctor, because I can say things like, hey, in med school, wouldn't you wish you had this tool? And for example, I'll give you a real example. In med school, the famous saying is, see one, do one, teach one. And what that really means is the first time I intubated, put a tube down someone's throat to help them breathe, I literally saw the first one, and then they had another patient and say, here you go, Harvey, you're next. And I thought, what? Are you kidding? And they're like, no, you're next. And then I did it. And they're like, okay, now your job is to teach the next person.
Yes.
What if I use AI now to walk through that with virtual reality, having AI, and now going through the simulator and say 100 times before I touch a human being? Wouldn't that give me more? And so when I speak to doctors, they're like, yeah, I get it. Okay, that's fine. I'm okay with that. And so that's how I'm able to teach and educate and even convince some of the people that I know are naysayers into saying, okay, that application, that angle, I agree with. I can't argue that one. Yes, let's do that one.
So Harvey, do you still practice medicine part-time, or is it totally now in the background for you?
It's a hard pill. I'm doing telemedicine, so I can just stay, keep my license.
Okay.
But most of my time is educating. As a result, I've been blessed that people are calling me to come and speak. The country of Singapore has hired me to be an advisor for digital health for Singapore. So in October, I'll be there. And for the next 2 years, I'll be advising the country. The Texas Medical Association, after hearing me speak in May, the president came literally as I'm coming off the stage and say, we would like you to be an advisor for the Texas Medical Association. Yeah. So I've just been blessed that I'm able to help. And so I do three things. I literally consult companies and help them. And then second is keynote. And then the third, I just love the scientists in me. I love doing stuff. So my business partner and I are creating different AI products in healthcare and non-healthcare items to put out in the world. Just because I see things and I'm like, oh my gosh, if we just put this plus this, this could change this industry. So that's literally what we're doing.
Well, that's very interesting. Most of the doctors I've talked to that are informatics, they have maintained. They want to keep a little bit of credibility in terms of the medical practice, because the people they're talking to, when you kind of forsake that, they kind of look at you like you've gone to the other side, but you're still actively involved in medicine. That just leads to the credibility of what you're doing and how it gets done. So I think that's probably a really smart move. You know, there's certainly a huge demand for consulting, and I think it's simply because there's a tremendous unawareness. People want to learn. They want to get their advice from a trusted party, someone who's got the credentials, someone who's got experience, someone who's kind of been down the path before. They can relate to them, because when you start to look at solving problems in the AI world, you know, the very first thing that I think should be asked is, what problem are we trying to solve? As opposed to, this is cute, this is funny, let's do something with AI because it looks nice. Really focusing in on what kind of problem can we solve? So Harvey, you mentioned that you've been, you know, working on some different technologies. Without going too deep, why don't you give our audience a sense of some of the tinkering, I call it tinkering and experimenting, if you will, in creating new approaches to some of the problems that are out there in healthcare. What comes to mind for you right off the top?
Yeah. As an emergency room physician, I work literally across the street from an international airport. And as a result, anyone that got sick in the world that came to Dallas would literally come to our hospital. And as a result, I had to deal with different cultures, different languages, different ways of approaching. The medicine is the same, but your words change. And so now there might be a barrier of language. There might be some diseases in some parts of the world that don't exist here in the United States. And my point is this, having AI, I'll give you an example, to help me communicate with that person is huge. Case in point, if I'm speaking to someone in the Middle East, there's certain customs and certain ways you speak to individuals because of to be respectful, versus if I speak to someone here in Texas. And so being able to leverage AI to give me examples, to tell me how I speak to them, what examples should I use? Simple one would be, hey, here in Dallas, Texas, we say football and it's, you know, American football. And we think of Dallas Cowboys. I see that same words in Europe, but they think soccer. And so immediately, if I'm trying to relate their healthcare system and giving them examples to their health, if I'm using the wrong words, I can't communicate. And if I cannot communicate and get really into speaking to them, they won't understand what I'm saying and I won't be able to give the best healthcare. Take it to another level. If I'm speaking to a five-year-old, we know the attention span of a five-year-old, you have to change the way we speak. And so one of the things I'm teaching is, let's take the core discharge instructions, convert those core concepts into a coloring book, and let's use AI. And the process is as follows. I take the discharge instructions, tell AI to dilute it to just what are the core principles that I'm trying to convey. Then I take those core principles and I plug it again into AI and say, just give me a coloring book for that one image. And then I put it all together. And now I can literally sit with the child and color with the child. And now I can educate them on their disease. And then you're like, well, Harvey, that's great for kids, but what about the teenagers? Well, there's already models that I've already used to create comic books for the same thing. And so here's a simple idea of how can we communicate? And guess what? If I get a hold of the child, of the teenager, and I really speak to them, not just explain, speak to them where they understand, guess what? They're going to take their meds. They're not going to have certain issues because now they're educated. And that's how I'm saying, let's simple things of using AI to communicate.
So when we look at AI in a broader sense, when we look at particularly like a ChatGPT, if AI is a loaf of bread, I would think that ChatGPT and its equivalents are just a little slice on the edge of the loaf there. It's such a more encompassing area, and it's growing so fast and it's changing so fast that you really can't keep up with it. I mean, I can see where it'd be a full-time job for you just to be aware of the latest technology tools, the latest software tools. I mean, I went out the other day and just looked up what are some of the popular ML algorithms for certain tasks, and there's literally dozens and dozens and dozens of them now. You know,
yeah.
And how do you know what to choose and what to pick, and how's this changing from day to day to day? So how do you manage? I call it infotoxology. So much information that we're getting poisoned with it. How do you manage through all that? Where do you go to stay current?
Awesome question. I do a couple of things. I cheat in that I'm using Perplexity, another AI, and I signed up for their pro edition, and I don't have any shares. I'm just sharing with you how I do it. And I'm able to go into it, and AI allows me to see what the latest articles are. But then here's the magic. People out there are like, well, he could just use Google. No, this is the difference. I can now have a conversation with the AI. So if we're looking up topic X, it's showing me the resources, where they got it, and then it has a hyperlink. So now I can verify that AI is not hallucinating, that it's telling me exactly where it got it from. And then I can take it to the next level. I can literally start having conversation and say, well, what are the positives of this article? What are some of the negatives? And what are some other resources that are against this particular article? And then I can use that. The other thing I'm doing, and this is really, really geeky. One of the slide tips to that is I also wait to see what the masses are saying. So I read, and then if I see it on LinkedIn, and then I know my colleagues are constantly telling me what they see. And so if I see two or three people tell me, hey, Harvey, have you seen this article? I'm like, okay, now this is getting out there. People really are putting a lot of attention to this. And if I haven't heard of it or don't know about it, then I'm obviously reading. The other side of this that is really geeky, I'm creating a digital twin. I take all my books, all my resources, this interview, if you give me the transcript, and I put it into my digital twin. And how that works is the following. It's literally all those resources. And then I can literally have a conversation with myself and say, hey, I wrote this book on ethics and these were the core principles, but this new article came out. Let's have a conversation. So I plug that in with my digital twin, and now it's able to go back and look at all my transcripts, all my information, and take that and put it together. And then I literally can be like, oh, that's right, I did talk about this. Or yeah, there was this one resource. And so I'm taking it just to another level. And then the last thing I'll say, my business partner has created this nice, fun agent. And it's a computer agent that literally can go on the web and find information. And so then it brings it to me. And I tell it, look, I'm looking specifically for XYZ. And then I get a report that's out there, and it gives me all of that information.
Very good. Very good. You know, there's a lot of things that are taking place right now in terms of tools and resources. And I'm just trying to keep up with a few of the basic ones and try to learn more about how to utilize them. There's some low-hanging fruit out there just for what I would call simple operational efficiency, using Gen AI to really do some fundamental functional work. And then on the other hand, there's some high-end solutions, you know, where you look at retinopathy and with diabetic retinopathy and yeah, finding ways to do screening with that. And, you know, such a broad approach. I took a short course at MIT on AI because, like you, I was curious. I needed to learn more. And there's probably 160 people in the course worldwide. And everybody was asked why they wanted to go to the course. And most of these people were very well educated. A lot of them were physicians. And a lot of them had a lot of experience, but they knew nothing at all about AI. And quite frankly, they were kind of scared not to be knowing. They were kind of feeling left behind. And so when you stop and think about some of the current regulations affecting AI and healthcare, are there any major things going on there that we should be paying attention to?
Yeah, that's a great question. I look at AI in specifically ethics and regulation, in three parts. I always look to see what Europe's doing, what regulations coming out, what are they against. Then I look at California and see how they're doing things, because they're different from the entire United States. And then I look at the United States as a whole to see what our leaders are saying. For example, executive order, what did Biden say and what is he doing? And then I pay attention to the leaders, OpenAI, Facebook, all the big dogs out there. And what are they saying to the government, and what legislation they're trying to push? That way I can see, okay, here's the eyes from someone that owns a big multi-billion dollar company. What kind of things are they pushing for? Here's Europe. And why are they resistant to X, Y, and Z? Why do they want this? That way I can go back and say, okay, I see the angle of Europe. Now I see the angle from California and why they're doing it the way they're doing it. And then now I see why the special interest groups are pushing. That way I get a full spectrum of the different angles to it, because all of us have different angles to everything. So there might be something that I totally agree with Europe that I'm like, wait, in healthcare, maybe I don't want that. From a 10,000 feet high, just to give you an example, yes, I want to always make sure that we keep patient privacy secure, that we're not using biased algorithms that are going to hurt our patients. With that said, I want to make sure that we're balancing and not holding back technology, because literally this morning I was on the Dr. Phil TV network talking about prostate cancer with AI. And if we were to regulate it to the point where some of these technologies cannot be used, we are literally killing people. So it's this fine balance where we want that technology to be able to identify these cancers sooner. And if we can identify cancer sooner, we're saving lives. But at the same time, I want to make sure that these algorithms, and this is why I'm out there educating, that doctors and healthcare professionals understand the risk and how it works, because I don't want them to be biased and push down a certain algorithm and now they're doing more harm than good. So it's this interesting balance. And I feel like if we don't know, again, it's that famous saying, if we don't know what we don't know. And my goal is, let's teach people these core things so that they can evaluate AI a little bit more careful.
You know, I'm reading a book right now, Harvey. It's by the top lead person at Microsoft in AI. His name is Mustafa Suleiman.
Oh, yeah. Great book.
Yeah, you know the book. It's called The Coming Wave.
Yeah, very good book.
Boy, it's such a great listen. So I'm trying to promote that to our listeners. You should go listen to that book. I know that you've already listened to it or read it. And the thing about it, the first half of the book, he's talking about all the advances, the history, the wonderfulness of all these things that take place. And the second half of the book, he's talking about, oh my goodness, we could destroy the world here very easily. Sometimes things happen, you know, systems go down worldwide due to some unintended consequence, updating software, et cetera, not to be specific here. And wow, sometimes these ransomware things take place. And then his thesis there is that what happens when a ransomware gets AI enabled and, you know, goes to challenge the whole world there. It's an interesting concept. And I think it really brings up a lot of the topics that we should be discussing more and more. And I noticed that you had published what I think is really kind of cute. It's the 10 commandments of AI. Okay. And not to go through all 10 of them here. I think Moses was good enough to get them all the ones in a paper like you did. But, you know, looking at privacy and security, give us your thoughts on what type of stringent security measures need to be in place.
Yeah. As a physician, I worry of all these hackers out there hacking into our medical records and holding them ransom and asking for money. And so number one, we have to secure this data. So that's at the highest priority. Luckily, we have HIPAA, so all the hospital systems are aware. There's a culture around it. The difference now is AI. We don't know about this AI thing. So I want to make sure that our healthcare institutes are aware that that data now is being mined. Big companies want that data so they can use AI. And I want to, that brings me to the second point. I want all of us to be transparent. So if your data, my data is being used, then I want us to know, which brings to the interaction within your physician and then your patient. If you're going to the doctor, you as a patient, wouldn't you want to know that AI is being used? And so I'm talking to hospital systems saying, hey, we need to have a sign out in the waiting room and the paperwork so that when you're signing away your rights of X, Y, and Z, that you understand you're also signing away for AI to be in there. But a lot of people don't realize. And I feel like, you know how we all get these documents and they're like, okay, sign here, and they're just flipping the pages and you're like, ah, what did I just sign? I think we need to be very, very transparent, more than ever. Because I know some people would want to know. I would want to know.
I know you're a top voice on LinkedIn, and I was watching a post from another top voice who's a nurse, and she basically showed all these pictures of nurses, and she said, AI has stereotyped nursing. They're all women, all with the little white hat on, and no matter what happens, these biases start to come forward. And that's got to be a real concern, too, in terms of eliminating biases. You're talking about working with people around the world, and hopefully that helps counter some of the biased thinking that we might have by a local region. What are your thoughts on that as well?
I often tell companies and countries, we need to look at our own data for our own country. And let me expand. If I'm using, let's just pretend I'm using ChatGPT and I'm just going to pick some random country. I'm in Nigeria. The data that's in AI for that particular healthcare problem, for that particular issue, more than likely was studied for Americans, a certain subtype of Americans. And so then you're comparing apples and oranges. And now me in Nigeria, I may be pushing a certain treatment and it's totally wrong. And so to your question, what I'm advocating is we need to create our own AI for our specialty, number one. So if I'm an ER doctor, we should have ER. And then not only just that, the people that are reinforcing the model, that are training it, should be only ER. If it's a dermatologist, unless it's dermatology ER, they have no business. Take that to the next level. I'm telling countries like Nigeria, saying, okay, let's look at our own data. Let's use our own models and let's train it from this model from this country. So that way it's trained with those angles to it. And then the second part to this, I'm educating the doctors and healthcare professionals to understand the difference, because if not, they'll start using the wrong model for the wrong thing and not realizing it.
Yeah. Let's shift our conversation a little bit to technology, because I know you like that and I love it too. So we're looking at NVIDIA and their processing capability. And I think it was in the Coming Wave book, he did a great example of explaining how powerful these computer systems are nowadays. And I just want to kind of go over that concept as well with you, because I know you can relate to it. So a flop is a floating point operation per second, and a teraflop is 10 to the 12th of those. And I think NVIDIA now has a GPU, a graphics processing unit, that's 12 teraflops. Mm-hmm. And so someone said, well, I don't get this teraflop. Give me a better feeling for it. So he did. He said, imagine 1 billion people, a billion people. Now keep in mind, a count to a billion, 1 second at a time, will take you 32 years. 32 years to count to a billion. Well, imagine a billion people, and each of those billion people have 1 million calculators in their hands, a million calculators with the same complex multiplication, and they all hit enter at the same time. That's 1 teraflop. Wow. How powerful are these computers to run these big, big models and things like that? So I think it's important for us to recognize that the technology is driving this thing so incredibly fast that we have to pause and really stop and ask ourselves, does this end? You know, we got quantum computing and other things like that. But I noticed that you're a big fan and you've written a book on the new product from Apple called Apple Vision. Apple Vision, healthcare pioneers. So give us a quick synopsis of that initiative. And what do you think about this Apple Vision?
Yeah. So the Apple Vision Pro really resonated with me when I noticed that you can go through and have see-through vision, and not just see through the goggles or the device, but you can actually have clear images in real time and not, you know, bump into a wall using it. And some of the first things I noticed is literally the day after Apple Vision Pro came out, a neurosurgeon was using the device in surgery and did it for over 10 hours. And I thought, holy cow. And I've noticed, then I started seeing all these surgeons doing the same thing. And I thought, okay, why the Apple Vision Pro? just to give you an example why I'm so excited is that C1 Teach one that we already talked about. But now in surgery, imagine you've seen the doctors with the little glasses that they try to blow it up because they need it. Well, imagine having the Apple Vision Pro on, and now with your hands, you can expand the image. And now if I'm doing surgery on you, I could have your digital twin in virtual reality there, and I can see what the anatomy, or I can pull your x-rays or CAT scan and MRIs and lab work. And now I literally have this virtual world of all the data that I need. And that way I can still be in the surgical field. I can be taking care of you, and my hands are there, but then literally all that information is there. So if I need to know, okay, you know what, his anatomy is a little different. This vessel here is a little bit at a different angle than other human beings. Now I know ahead of time that when I'm going in, this is there. So I just got excited about this particular product, and it got so excited that I'm like, I'm going to write a book on this thing. And so I think this book came out 2 weeks after the device came out to the market.
Well, I have several friends that have the Apple Vision Pro, and they absolutely love it. I've used one myself, and I'm just totally, totally amazed at what and how it works. And I know that when the price comes down on that and the next version comes out, that we'll be seeing some really more healthcare adaptive solutions based on that. On the topic of Apple, they have not AI, artificial intelligence, they have Apple intelligence. And maybe you can share some thoughts on that. My overall thought was that they're trying to protect your data, keeping your data safe when you use AI. Give us your thoughts on that, Harvey.
As we start looking at these different models, I always say it's like looking at different sizes, different flavors. And let's take the example I just gave, we need our own model for different parts of the world. Well, imagine having a device that has all that information of ChatGPT on your phone. Obviously, it can't handle, like you mentioned, all that data. But what if you could train a model to have just enough information in it to take care of you? Again, my brain as a doctor thought of the following thing. What if you could put all of CPR on your device? And my example that I give is specifically with the Apple iPhone. What if you're at the Grand Canyon, which ironically, my mother is at the Grand Canyon right now, and you have no Wi-Fi service, you have no cell phone service, and God forbid someone passes out and you need to do CPR. I do see this as a possibility where you would put the complete algorithm of CPR, advanced life support, and now someone can hold the phone and someone else can be doing CPR and the phone would walk them through saying, hey, that's too fast, that's too slow, go a little deeper. And then because the Apple now talks to satellites, you literally from the Grand Canyon, you can start pointing towards the sky and it'll tell you, yep, that's where the satellite's at. And it'll let you call for a helicopter to come save that person. And so that example is how I see these devices are going to help us. We're going to be able to do so many things because the information will be on our phone. And to your point of privacy, all of that will be private because here's the beauty. You don't need to call ChatGPT or go to the cloud because all that information is going on the phone. And so that's going to revolutionize things. And then Apple has taken it to the next level where they have made a cloud, but it's internal to them. And so now you could take it just within their cloud servers and your information is safe. I just thought it was a brilliant idea. I can't wait to get my next iPhone.
Well, that's the industry we're in right now, is constant change and surprises, and hopefully more better enlightening surprises than negative ones. So Harvey, final statement I like to make is that I'd like to say it's never going to be the same. Would you agree with that?
Oh my gosh, yes. And I always tell my colleagues and friends, remember, this is the worst this technology will ever be. And so as we move forward, I'll give a quick example. As an ER doctor, wouldn't you want to have that peripheral brain? And I'm going to go a little space age here in technology. I see a future where we'll have a robot and that robot's eyes will have ChatGPT 4 and 5 in it, where it could tell me, hey, Bob's blood pressure is this, his age is this, his cholesterol is this, his voice changed, and I know that he may be having early signs of depression or XYZ, and that will be the future. And I say future, I see that literally here within the next 12 months.
Yeah, the future gets a lot closer, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Okay, well, we've been fortunate this afternoon, today, this morning, tonight, because he's there everywhere around the world, getting the perspective of AI from Dr. Harvey Castro. Harvey, thank you for taking the time to share your insights. I know that you have a balanced approach to fostering innovation and we look forward to following you in the future. So thank you for being with us today.
Thank you, sir. It's an honor to be here, and thank you so much.